Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Congratulations on getting through your 9-to-5. Thank you so much for listening. It is The Drive. Carrington Harrison here, Brandon Kiley here, Brad Fanning here, taking you up until 6 o'clock. Coming up in about 30 minutes or so, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. All you got to do is keep it locked in to The Drive. Later in the show, we'll talk about Deion Sanders. There's a new 30 for 30. I remember
Is that tonight? Is that on tonight?
It is tonight. The Deion Sanders 30 for 30. I feel like 30 for 30 used to be a huge deal. Now they've kind of gone to the wayside a little bit. But I'm actually excited for this one. I think hearing about Deion Sanders as a football and baseball player is going to be a really – I think it's called Deion's double play. I think that's what it's called.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, I think the reason why the 30 for 30s aren't quite as big of a deal as they used to be, they're doing shorter version, like really cool story, like the SC featured – the E60 stuff. They're doing a lot of different type 30 for 30s that are more short form. But yeah, the Deion thing, I'm looking forward to. I still remember when he dumped that water on Tim McCarver in the Braves clubhouse. I mean, that was an absolute mess. So I'm looking forward to this one.
Coming up in a little bit, again, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. But let's get to the top stories of the day in Kansas City. Hit it, Brandon.
Okay, now, from the beginning.
And now, the moment you've all been waiting for.
Check it out.
The top stories of the day, every day at 5 o'clock. The hits.
Cue it up.
One.
First hit of the day is brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for a mostly not Jewish city, open in the Crossroads, and it is the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. The big news today is that the NCAA announced its decision in the Missouri Tutor case. They imposed a one-year postseason ban for the football, baseball, and softball teams because of a rogue tutor who did schoolwork for about 12 students across three different sports. Former Mizzou wide receiver T.J. Moe says this is a dangerous precedent that the NCAA is setting.
Missouri fully cooperates and does everything that's asked, and they get crushed compared to North Carolina, who just says, hey, well, once you're caught in a lie, just keep lying and hope that nobody catches up to you. I mean, it's just absolutely brutal. The NCAA is setting the precedent that there's no reason to ever cooperate. Why would you?
What message do you guys think the NCAA sent today to its member institutions?
Why? I mean, I don't know what other conclusion you can come to based on the information that we have. We'll certainly talk a lot more about it after the hits, and we'll also play for you Dennis Dodd, who joined us earlier today. But that's 100% the message you got. North Carolina had a much more serious academic fraud. They got off with a slap on the wrist. Missouri had academic fraud, admitted it to the NCAA, was forthcoming about the information that they received, and now can't participate in a bowl game next year. I don't know what other conclusion you can come to other than lie when the police come to ask you questions.
I know. I mean, you're trying to set an example for your student athletes in your university by being honest and calling the NCAA and say, hey, we got a problem here. Here's what happened. We didn't know about it. Investigate it. Do whatever you got to do. It affected 12 athletes. North Carolina lied about it. North Carolina told a department chair and a secretary to not cooperate with the NCAA. They got a slap on the wrist because of a fake class they had for 18 years to help keep athletes eligible. Missouri had a rogue tutor that helped 12 athletes, and they get this? It's ridiculous. Of course, lie to the NCAA. Don't tell the truth. Don't cooperate. You don't have any legal ramifications if you don't. They cannot subpoena you. Missouri screwed up by being honest, and the NCAA dropped the hammer on them. As a KU fan, I feel awful for Missouri and its fans today.
Two. Second hit of the day, Travis Kelce was making the rounds today at the Super Bowl. He went on the Dan Patrick Show earlier this morning, and he was asked what went wrong for the offense in the AFC Championship game.
Getting off of that man coverage, it took us a little while, and at times that we were finally getting off man coverage, Pat was kind of under duress back there. All in all, I hate to say it, but we weren't ready for it. And, in the second half, we came out and we came out firing because we were.
I think the quote that we've all kind of been focused on today is he said, we weren't ready for it. How does that happen in the AFC Championship game when you've already played the Patriots earlier in the season?
I actually hear the we aren't ready for it a little bit different than you and Fanning hear. I hear it of experience matters, that we didn't really think about that and factor it in. That the Patriots have played in this game 13 times over the last 16 years, where the Chiefs haven't. So when I hear it wasn't ready for it, I kind of hear it like Kansas City thought it was an 8-foot pool, And then they jumped in the pool, and they found out it was a 20-foot pool, and they just couldn't handle it. They played like it the first 30 minutes. Think about the Chiefs' first drive. Think about the Patriots' first drive. Who looked like a team that had played in the AFC Championship game? Who looked like a team who hadn't? That's kind of how I hear we weren't ready going into the game. I certainly think from a mental and game planning standpoint that the Chiefs are ready to play the Patriots. I think he's talking much more about the mental side of it than the preparation.
Yeah, see, I don't. I don't know how you can't be ready for that game. I mean, the Chiefs played in a ton of big games this year. Their head football coach has been in how many NFC title games? What, five of them? And then he had an AFC title game, a ton of playoff games here in Kansas City. There's a lot of veterans on this team. And you weren't ready for the AFC title game in Kansas City at Arrowhead? And the team that was coming in has been to eight straight AFC championships. And they're the greatest professional sports dynasty we've ever seen. The greatest coach and the great quarterback. And you weren't ready for that? I don't understand that one. I have a hard time wrapping my brain around it. You can't go into a game against the New England Patriots in an AFC title game and not be ready for it for an entire half. Like, that's irritating to me, and it shouldn't make Chiefs fans angry.
Hit number three is brought to you by Broadway Deli, a mostly Jewish deli for a mostly not Jewish city. It is now open in the Crossroads, and it is the official deli of 610 Sports Radio. So, guys, the Pro Football Hall of Fame is announcing the 2019 class this weekend. Most people seem to agree Tony Gonzalez is going to be inducted as a first ballot Hall of Famer. This is obviously a huge story. It's going to be a huge story. So why doesn't it feel like a bigger deal here in Kansas City right now?
Man, I've been trying to figure that out all day. I don't get it, because I feel like it would be a big deal if Jamaal Charles was getting in as a first ballot Hall of Famer. I feel like it'd be a big deal if Priest Holmes was getting in as a first ballot Hall of Famer. Tony Gonzalez getting in and it's being absolutely no buzz for it. Maybe you want to factor it in so he played his final days for the Atlanta Falcons. Maybe that's it, but I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm confused because many of you, your first Chiefs jersey was a Tony Gonzalez jersey. Some of your favorite players of all time, I guess pre-Patrick Mahomes, was Tony Gonzalez. He could arguably be on the Mount Rushmore of greatest players to ever play for the Kansas City Chiefs. I feel like this should be a lot bigger deal than what it is.
Yeah, I'm curious why it's not a bigger deal in Kansas City right now either. And the only thing that I could come up with is really two things. I mean, Tony Gonzalez to me doesn't feel like a true Kansas Cityan. He feels like a guy that played here, where other guys feel like true Kansas Cityans. And Tony Gonzalez to me doesn't feel that way. And maybe that's part of it. I don't know. Another part of it, Tony Gonzalez never won a playoff game here in Kansas City. And I think when you think of the great careers of some of the best athletes in Kansas City, you don't want him to take you back to a game in 2001 against the Jets where he had 10 catches. You know, you want to go back to a period of time where your team won and took you on this magical ride of the postseason and you saw something you've never seen before. I think that's the difference in when George Brett went into the Hall of Fame, went into Cooperstown. He went to two World Series and won one in 1985 and damn near hit 400, and he makes his home here in Kansas City. Tony Gonzalez feels a long way away to me, if that makes any sense. That's all I can come up with, too, because it really is a big deal. He changed the tight end position. I mean, I think without Tony Gonzalez, we don't necessarily look at basketball players the same way as we do now in the NFL. I think he changed the position for a number of different reasons. And, yeah, I don't know. It's a little bit of a head-scratcher to me, too.
But I guess the difference is, and I'm not trying to compare Tony Gonzalez to George Brett because of all the reasons that you said. It's not like we live in a city that has had a lot of postseason success, you know? So, like, that, what you're saying is they never won a playoff game. Man, that's the case for, like, 25 years of Chiefs football. They just weren't very successful. But I don't really hear that argument towards Derek Thomas. I don't really hear that argument towards other great Kansas City Chiefs players of, oh, well, they never won a playoff game. So, Tony Gonzalez, of all those Chiefs that didn't win a playoff game, you could argue after Derek Thomas, he's probably second of the greatest Chief over the last 30 years. Now, let's see what Mahomes does. Let's see how his career finishes. See how Tyreek Hill does. But I think if we're going over the last 30 years, since 1990, ranking Chiefs players and how they've been, it probably goes Derek Thomas one, and you could probably make a Tony Gonzalez argument over Derek Thomas.
Let me ask you this. If Sal Perez ends up going into the Hall of Fame someday, it's going to be a huge deal in Kansas City, right? Salvi Splash, we're talking two World Series, one championship, a bunch of gold gloves. Like, and we're not going to think of what Sal did in the regular season somewhere. We're going to think about that those two magical runs in 14 and 15.
I agree with you, but I'm saying is for the Chiefs, there's no comparison to that.
You're right.
Like, I'm with you. The Royals have comparisons. Brett won a World Series.
But I'm telling you, I think that maybe that's why. Like, you go back to, I've never heard somebody come up, hey, man, you remember that game Tony Gonzalez had in 99? God dang, that was amazing. No, you go back to a team that took you through some magical run and made you feel, you know, all crazy inside, you know, and the Chiefs haven't done that, and they never did it with Gonzalez, really.
So that concludes the hits for today, but you can agree that is a recent thing. You agree that is just that, like, what you're describing just started in 2014. Like, that was not the case in 2011 because nobody had experienced that before. That was not the case in 2012. That was not the case in 2013. No one had experienced this magical ride.
True, but I experienced it in the 80s and in the 70s, too, with George Brett, and I think that's why it felt like a much bigger deal. You've got a champion that's going into the Hall of Fame from Kansas City. And you remember those playoffs. You remember those series with the Yankees. You remember these, you know, these crazy matchups, you know, coming back on the Blue Jays, beating the Cardinals. I mean, the moments that you think about the most are not regular season moments. They're typically postseason moments with some of the greatest players of all time.
So coming up in about 20 minutes or so, we'll give you a chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. So about the University of Missouri. Now, you guys know where my allegiance lies. I'm a Missouri Tiger fan through and through. But I think that you guys know that I can be honest and subjective when it comes to University of Missouri. At least I kind of pride myself on this. I need somebody to help me because no one has been able to answer the question of me all day. Now, you, Fanning, not Dennis Dodd, who we had on earlier in the show, no one has been able to explain this to me. This is from Nicole Auerbach. She works now with The Athletic. She was on the conference call, and we'll play some for you here momentarily. This was the NCAA Missouri conference call today. So the NCAA, they come out with their penalty. People are unhappy about it. They do a conference call. This is from David Roberts. He is the chief hearing officer of the panel. He's the one that calls the shots. He's the guy in charge. He was asked if schools are now being encouraged not to cooperate or to tell the truth. Now, I've heard the NCAA, when it comes time to pay the players, they will come up with the most backward and twisted logic to keep the ruse up. This is what he said when asked if schools are now being encouraged to not cooperate or tell the truth. Quote, "You can certainly make that argument." Huh? That has to be confusing. You were telling me you are the hearing chief officer of the panel. It was your job to look through the evidence and to come to a fair punishment. I'm not saying that Missouri should be punishment free. There was a tutor who was taking classes for students. Not only 12 students, but nonetheless, there was a tutor who was asked by Missouri to help student athletes stay eligible. Mm-hmm. I don't know why she felt this pressure. I don't know where the pressure came from. Missouri and the NCAA, which I think is fair to note, is not saying that pressure came from the administration.
Yeah.
It's not like there's some smoking gun.
And they looked and they couldn't find anything.
There is no email with Mike Alden that is telling her to do this. There is no email from Gary Pinkel or Barry Odom or Mike Anderson or whoever is coached at Missouri saying, hey, we got this kid. He's struggling. Take this test for him. If they had found that, I would understand it a little bit more, and we would be having this argument. But Dave Matter, who's been covering Missouri for as long as I can remember, there's no reason that this should be a belief in NCAA circles. The NCAA Commission of Infractions is essentially saying Missouri is being penalized for being honest. Again, something wrong happened here. If you want to penalize Missouri, that's perfectly fine. But one of my biggest issues with the NCAA, aside from the payment of athletes, aside from the transfer rules, I got a lot of issues with the NCAA. My biggest thing is, you cannot tell me the value of scholarships and what they mean for student athletes and how incredible they are and tell me how these kids get to go to, or how they get to start life with no student loans and this great value it is to have scholarships. And then part of your penalty is to take scholarships away from those same kids you're telling me it is the greatest experience. You cannot take away bowl games, which again, you're telling me that this system needs bowl games, that it's about taking kids to new opportunities, allowing them to travel and see all these things. And part of your penalty is taking those things away. If you want to fine the University of Missouri saying, hey,
from kids that never had anything to do with any of this.
So this is, if you want to come to Missouri and say, hey, this happened under your watch. I don't care if you knew. I don't care if you did know. Just like you got kids. If your kid comes over to my house and breaks my television, you're his parent. you owe me money for this television. You had nothing to do with it, but you owe me money for the television. So if they're saying in this context of, hey, Missouri, this happened under your watch. I don't care if you enforced it. I don't care what happened. You got to pay for this. We're going to fine you $1 million. It stinks. It sucks. But I think that that's a penalty Missouri can live with. But this here, the NCAA, you are hypocrites to the one thing you tell me has the greatest value for these 18 and 19-year-old students. How are we penalizing hundreds of kids, 85 kids on the football team, kids on the baseball program, women on the softball program? How are we taking away their ability to compete in the SEC tournament, not just even bowl games, the SEC tournament and any postseason that can happen? So we're taking away bowl games. We're taking away potential College World Series. How is that the solution to fixing a problem that 12 people were involved in some wrongdoing? The punishment in this situation just simply doesn't match the crime.
No, it doesn't. And I agree with you on that. I'm going to play the other side of it, even though I don't agree with it. Okay, so hear me out on this, C-Dot. I think the reason they do it is because they want to make it hurt. And they want to make sure that you don't let this happen again at your institution anymore. And the easiest way to hurt a program and to hurt a school and its athletic department is to take great players away, to limit budgets, to take scholarships away, to do those types of things. Now, I don't think it's fair, and I think it's the wrong way to do it. I side with you on that, but that's the way you get their attention. I'm going to read a paragraph from the ESPN piece on this, okay? And I'll explain why this is a really, really big deal, not so much for football, but for the other programs. This is from ESPN. The football, baseball, and softball programs will also have a 5% reduction in scholarships for the 2019-20 academic year. They also have a 7-week ban on unofficial visits, a 12.5% reduction in official visits and evaluation days, and a 7-week ban on recruiting communications and off-campus recruiting evaluation days. The NCAA has also fined Missouri $5,000 plus 1% of each budget in football, baseball, and basketball. Now, football can take that. Football can handle that. But not baseball and not softball. We're talking about much smaller budgets. We're talking about a baseball team that gets 11.7 scholarships for the entire squad. And you're going to take away 1% of their budgets. You're going to take over one scholarship away that they've got to spread over like 30-some-odd players. You know, and everything else that comes along with this. We're talking minuscule budgets for a softball and a baseball team that's going to get slammed for this deal when the athletes that are involved in it right now had nothing to do with it. The NCAA overreacted dramatically today, and it's going to dramatically affect baseball and softball at Mizzou much more than it will affect football because those budgets are outrageous. You got, what, 85 scholarships for a Division I football team? So, yeah, the NCAA is completely overreacted on this thing. And we talk about football because that's what we watch. We don't sit down and consume college softball and college baseball on the SEC network. At least not very many people do. But those are the programs that are going to take the hit the most. You got some poor guy, Coach Beiser, at Mizzou in his second year there, had nothing to do with this, just lost 1% of his budget over a scholarship, and now he can't recruit and call and communicate with recruits. I mean, his program basically is handicapped now because of this ruling.
I want to play this for you. This is from the Commission of Infractions. So these are the people that oversaw this. These are some, like, this audio is mind-blowing to me. The NCAA admits that they only knew about this because Missouri told them about it.
I'm not going to compare the cases, but you certainly have identified a significant issue in this case, and that's when a member institution comes forward and self-reports a violation and agrees to the classification as a severe level one, there are consequences that happen. And in this particular case, I mean, Missouri did the right thing. It self-reported. It acknowledged and accepted responsibility. The decision details how we go over the aggravating and mitigating factors. And all of those are factored in, but the penalty guidelines that are put in place by the association control what we can and can't do in terms of penalties. So I would not say they were penalized. I would say that, you know, improperly or extraordinarily, the guidelines the association put in place operated as intended by the association.
So the guy at the end is talking about the guidelines in place. So the guidelines that the NCAA put in place, it is deemed Missouri of a level one infraction. I want to read to you guys because maybe you don't know what happened in North Carolina. And somehow this was not a level one infraction. Now, I guess I want to start with this. I know I should probably care about academic fraud, but come on now. We all were in college, and we all know what's up. I've said time and time again, when I was in college, when I was broke like many of you in college, and I just needed money to take a girl out or go get something to eat, I was doing kids' homework for $5. Hey, you got a paper coming up? I got some free time. Give me 20 bucks. I'll write your 2-page paper for you. Like, I was doing that. I was making those kind of deals so I could keep a little money in my pocket and, you know, have some Nikes on my feet from time to time. So I have participated in this sham, which is college athletics. Let me read to you what happened in North Carolina and tell me if this doesn't sound like a level one infraction. This is from the New York Times. North Carolina, for nearly 2 decades, offered a, quote, shadow curriculum of fake classes into which athletes were steered. The scheme involved nearly 200 lax administered and grading papers, frequently requiring no attendance and just one paper, over nearly 2 decades in Africa or in Afro-American studies. Their students were disproportionately athletes, especially in the lucrative high-profile sports of football and men's basketball. So, in layman's terms, they created a fake course to keep football players and basketball players eligible. We've been around this enough to know about big-time college athletics. They do not care if you leave with a degree. They care if for the 4 years or 5 years they need you to play college athletics, you can stay eligible. 2 decades of this. Nothing happened in North Carolina. Basketball team never missed the NCAA tournament.
How many athletes? Did they ever say how many athletes that
I mean, it was 200 classes, so a lot of people.
Yeah, it's got to be tons.
So the loophole that Carolina had was, their argument was, this course, anybody could have took it. You, Brad Fanning, you could have took this course. Now, they just pushed athletes to take this course. But if you could find the magical special course in which you don't have to do any work, anybody could have taken this course. That was the argument that they used. Again, 200 classes. This happened at Missouri for 1 year involving 12 students. That, again, something wrong happened at Missouri. Nobody is arguing that something wrong didn't happen. It certainly seems less serious and rampant than what happened in North Carolina. The NCAA should not be in the business of ruling in favor for programs like UCLA and in favor of programs like North Carolina, in favor of programs like Kentucky, and then being heavy-handed for programs like Missouri. It's like Jerry Tarkanian said a while ago. So Kentucky got in trouble, but since they didn't want to penalize Kentucky, they penalized Cleveland State for an extra year. That's what it appears to me. Yeah. As a person that doesn't cheer for a marquee franchise. I can admit that. I love Missouri. We ain't a marquee franchise. We ain't North Carolina basketball. It appears to me that North Carolina is too good at basketball, so there's no way we could do anything to them.
So too big to fail.
But Missouri isn't good enough in basketball, not good enough at football, not good enough at baseball, that we're willing to penalize them really hard, but not do that to North Carolina. You cannot tell me that this exact same thing happens to Kansas basketball if it's the exact same scenario. Mm-hmm. You can't tell me this same thing happens to Alabama football if the exact same thing happens or Ohio State happens. Because I remember when Ohio State players were out here selling tattoos, when they were out here selling helmets for tattoos, they didn't ban them from the Sugar Bowl. They just were like, hey, you Terrell Pryor, you're in trouble. So come on now. Like, let's just be honest here, NCAA. Missouri's not good enough, so they got the foot where North Carolina is good enough, and you just let them pass. That's exactly what happened here.
It is. And Jim Sterk said that they're gonna appeal this, and they better win it, too. They better win it, because basically what the NCAA said today is just lie. You know, the department chair and the secretary of those fake classes at North Carolina refused to cooperate with the NCAA, so they couldn't prove anything. So they didn't do anything to them. They slapped their hand. Where at Missouri, you crippled two smaller programs in baseball and softball and a pretty good shot to the gut of the football program. The NCAA is a joke in this one. You know, you and I are on separate sides on a lot of things when it comes to the NCAA and student-athletes, especially in college, CDOT. But Missouri got a raw deal, and this is coming from a KU fan. And if there's any KU fan out there that's laughing about this right now and feels good about it, you shouldn't, because what the NCAA did to Missouri today was absolutely wrong.
I actually don't have any problem if you're a KU fan laughing. I just would ask you, when Silvio going to play? So, like, if you want to laugh at Missouri, I get it. Like, hey, the game's the game. It's jokes. I get my jokes off. If you want to laugh at Missouri, that's perfectly fine. I'm just asking you, when Silvio playing, and then we can move on.
But still, I mean, what happened to Missouri today is ridiculous. Like, you can't, like, that's not fair. You're basically telling schools that they shouldn't cooperate and they should lie to the NCAA. Missouri did everything that it was supposed to do. It found a problem. It called the NCAA. It self-reported. It dealt with 12 athletes. And then today, out of nowhere, you get a level one infraction because of this. It's a joke, man. It's a joke.
So Missouri has a appeal going on right now. They have 110 days to file the appeal. Certainly sounds like they're going to file the appeal. And Jim Stark thinks this is an appeal they can win.
I think that we'll continue to give them information, and we'll involve them in the understand that there's an appeal going on, and we expect to win that appeal.
I do want to share with you guys, if you have not heard, Kelly Bryant is reported to be staying at the University of Missouri, which puts a smile on everybody's face. Text line, yes, I hear you. We'll get to it in a little bit. We'll give you a chance to win $1,000 on our national cash contest. We'll continue to talk about sports. But, yes, we have to play it.
I mean, really? Should we expect anything less than the absolute worst luck in the world? The worst refs in the world, the worst calls in the world, the worst bowls in the world, the worst seed in the tournament in the world. We're Missouri fans, dude. We're Tigers. We are destined to continue to fail and be disappointed year after year after year. That's who we are, period. Look at the history. Some Missouri alumni or something back in the long time ago made somebody very, very angry, and I think that somebody's the Lord. And it's just not happening for the Tigers, man. Not happening.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
We will play our conversation with Dennis Dodd coming up in just a little bit to get you all the information you need to know about what's happening with the University of Missouri. But here's your chance to win $1,000 in our national cash contest. Text the word NEW, N-E-W, NEW, to 72881, as in what happened to the University of Missouri today is nothing new. If you want Chiefs talk, Missouri heartbreak, and a chance to win $1,000 in the 30s, well, there's only one station in Kansas City giving you all three of those things. It's this station. Weekdays, 7A, 7P. It pays. Listen to the largest sports radio company in the world. Message and data rates may apply. Your next chance to win is coming up in 1 hour, but why not go ahead and win right now? One more time for those of you in the back that can't hear.
Can I hear it one more time?
New, N-E-W, new, N-E-W. The National Cash Contest code word for 5:30 is new. We'll catch up with Dennis Dodd coming up in just a little bit, and there is a 30 for 30 tonight. We'll talk a little bit about that coming up in just a little bit, but this got you a little hot and bothered earlier today. This is Travis Kelce. He was on the Dan Patrick Show. This is what he said about the first half of the New England Patriots.
No. We knew what we were going to see. We practiced it all week. It was just they were a little bit more aggressive than we expected. And that's
physical.
Physically. Physically aggressive at the line of scrimmage, grabbing, holding, and just getting off of that man coverage. It took to us a little while, and at times that we were finally getting off man coverage, Pat was kind of under duress back there. So it was all in all, I hate to say it, but we weren't ready for it. And, in the second half we came out and we came out firing because we were.
I think back to all of our conversations with Bill Moss over the last couple of years, and I understand it as a guy who played on the defensive line in the NFL. He's always talked about the Chiefs' offensive line not being physical enough. And that their defensive line isn't physical enough. If we just think back to the last Chiefs game that we all watched, and I know you guys watched it, because 53 million people watched the game. The Chiefs got dominated up front, like absolutely dominated in that game. Whether it was the Chiefs' offensive line, who they've spent the number one overall pick, a second-round pick on Mitch Morse, a significant free agent contract with Mitch Schwartz, the Chiefs, we would agree, in NFL circles are considered to have a good offensive line.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mahomes got sacked four times in that game. Chiefs ran the ball for 40 yards in that game. Couldn't establish the run. Chiefs offensive line got dominated in the matchup against the New England Patriots. I didn't think about their defensive line. You got a first-team all-pro guy in Chris Jones. You got one of the better defensive lines in the NFL. You know how many times they pressured Tom Brady in that game?
Once.
Six. One sack in that game. You got dominated up front. The one thing I'm hoping Steve Spagnuolo comes in here, this has to be a more aggressive, this has to be a more physical defense. How many times have you sat there and watched a team just absolutely run the ball against the Chiefs and the Chiefs look absolutely helpless in stopping it? That happened in the AFC Championship game.
It did.
We can talk about D Ford. We can talk about all the other stuff. The Chiefs had no answer for Sonny Michel. None. The Patriots, if they were committed to running the football and said, hey, we want to run on this play, other than the one fourth down stop with Daniel Sorensen on that fourth down stop, the Chiefs were unable to stop the Patriots on the ground the whole day. Man, number one of getting over the hump maybe isn't drastically improving the roster. It's just you got to have a toughness. You got to have a physicality. You got to have an aggressiveness. And you got to bring it to these teams because you didn't bring it to the Patriots in the first matchup. You didn't bring it to the Patriots in the second matchup. You didn't bring it to the Rams earlier this season. I would say Seattle was more physical than you. Second time against the Chargers, they were a more physical group and bunch than you are. You got to get tougher. You got to get physical. And for one of your leaders on the team, one of your veteran leaders, best player in the NFL, his position, for him to say you weren't aggressive enough and physical enough, that's a big problem to me.
Now, I want to play it again. And I give Travis Kelce credit for this, all right? I give him credit for saying, or at least being honest about this. Here's what Kelce said on the Dan Patrick Show today.
Getting off of that man coverage, it took us a little while. And at times that we were finally getting off man coverage, Pat was kind of under duress back there. All in all, I hate to say it, but we weren't ready for it. And, you know, in the second half, we came out and we came out firing because we were.
I mean, as a Chiefs fan, this should irritate you. I mean, this should drive you absolutely nuts because what I heard there from Travis Kelce, and again, I appreciate the honest, you know, him being honest about this because we don't get that a lot from, you know, out of one Arrowhead drive, right? We get a lot of canned answers. Travis Kelce, to me, appeared to be telling the truth in exactly the way they felt. What I heard was, we knew what we were going to see. They were more aggressive. We weren't ready for it. That is absolutely 100% unacceptable. It's the AFC title game against the greatest coach and the greatest quarterback of all time. They're in their eighth consecutive AFC championship game. They have won five Super Bowls. How can you know what you were going to see, let them be more aggressive, and not be ready for it? That's the part that I just don't understand when it comes to what Kelce said. And again, I give him a ton of credit for coming out there and being honest. And saying, hey, more aggressive. We weren't ready for it, even though we knew what we were going to see. As a Chiefs fan, you should be irate when you hear that.
So earlier today, you and I had the opportunity to catch up with Dennis Dodd. Our conversation with Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports, it started with, what is his reaction to Missouri being put on a postseason ban for the 2019 season?
Well, given the North Carolina situation in 2017, Missouri's biggest mistake here may not have been fighting back enough or at all. I read the infractions report. Everybody agrees there was a rogue tutor there who tutored 12 players. They all know what went on. They can't name it. There is no smoking gun, at least according to the NCAA who directed this, or group of people who directed this, were left to believe she did it on her own, saying she was pressured, but can't name the name. Meanwhile, North Carolina, over 18 years, had serial academic fraud where they practiced a shadow curriculum where work was may or may not have been turned in, and classes didn't meet. Over 18 years, and they were allowed to skate, and Missouri gets a bowl ban. Something's wrong here.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my frustration in this is there's just no consistency with the penalties when it comes to the NCAA. That you're right. I mean, North Carolina had a much more serious, seem rampant problem. And then Missouri's, it seems like kind of like when you watch a game and then they have a makeup call that they let North Carolina kind of skate. So they're going extra hard on Missouri.
Yeah, I was looking at some documents from last week. The NCAA at least is giving, attention to this right now. In a document that the Raleigh paper obtained, a working group recommended to the presidents, listen to this, that the NCAA adopt an academic integrity bylaw. Wait a minute. In 2019, there isn't one?
Yeah.
That's where this whole thing stems from. The fact that, who is that Supreme Court judge? He didn't know what pornography was, but he knew it when he saw it. That's how they judge academic fraud these days and really forever.
We're talking to. Oh, sorry, Dennis.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say we're talking to Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports. Dennis, to me, it seems like the best legal advice going forward for any university or athletic department is to just tell your people not to talk to the NCAA, and then you can get away with it.
Well, or fight back. North Carolina spent millions of dollars, I think $3 million over the years defending this, and they ended up saying at the end of the investigation, "Yeah, we did wrong. But you can't tell us what classes to offer." That was basically their defense. And the NCAA went for it. And they have gone for it in other cases. Now, Missouri, I guess, is a little more cut and dried. But there wasn't any conspiracy here. There was nothing to hide. Missouri missed this person. She did it out of, it looks like she did it out of need for money. She said she was pressured, but can't name the person who pressured her there. So I think it's kind of suspicious, the person or person. So that's what we're left with. Those are the facts the NCAA has. And out of that, they come with a postseason ban for three sports.
Dennis, why did this woman come forward and do this?
You know, I don't know. I remember when it first came forward in the media, around the Star, I think, wrote the story in the newspaper. I can't remember. You know, it was almost like, you know, she was frustrated that she hadn't been heard. She had no money. She was living in her car. I wanted to get this off her conscience. I think that was the only reason she did it. I wasn't even sure she was going to speak to the NCAA because she wasn't taking reporters' calls to talk about it. You know, I don't know if there's anything in it for her. It's not like she gets any sort of recompense out of this. Maybe just to clear her conscience. I can't speak for her.
So right now we're talking to Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports. So, Dennis, what do you think happens next in this scenario? I know Missouri is filing an appeal. Based on kind of following these things and stories very similar, what do you think happens next in this case?
Well, unless Missouri can prove that the NCAA actually violated its own investigatory rules, I don't think they have much of a chance. Jim Sterk, the Missouri AD, said the NCAA abused its discretion. Those are the exact words that Ole Miss used in the Hugh Freeze situation. They were given a 2-year bowl ban, and the NCAA just dismissed that as a reason for an appeal. So unless you can find really a quantitative, I guess, violation of the investigatory process, they have, from what I see on the surface, they have little chance of winning the appeal.
So that was Dennis Dodd of CBS Sports. Jim Sterk seems to disagree with Dennis Dodd. I mean, it makes sense. He's the athletic director at the University of Missouri. He thinks that they have a chance to win the appeal. Certainly big. If you're a Missouri Tiger fan, you were looking at this season, I think Missouri legitimately has a chance to win 9 games. If some things can kind of break your way, maybe you get to 10. This had a chance to be a special year for Missouri, so not being able to play in a bowl game this season weighs pretty heavily. If I thought MU was going to be terrible this year, I wouldn't even be that worried about it. I'd be like, hey, you ain't going to a bowl game anyway. Like right now, this would be the perfect time to go ahead and find basketball sanctions. Like, they ain't going to the tournament this year. So if you want to take away the tournament this year, go ahead, NCAA, and find whatever you can on the basketball program. The football team had a chance to be good next year. They had a chance to really do some things. Give us a bowl game, NCAA. Go ahead and file that appeal, Jim Sterk. I believe in you.
He got you a quarterback, though, man, and he's not leaving, right? So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean,
what Kelly Bryant stand put for you?
I mean, what's the point of the season where if you win the SEC East, you can't go to the SEC Championship game? That doesn't sound very fun.
No, it doesn't sound very good, but at least you got a quarterback.
That doesn't sound very fun. Let me read to you guys really quickly what Barry Odom had to say, because Barry Odom, he came out hot and ready today. I wholeheartedly echo the comments stated so well earlier by Chancellor Cartwright and Athletic Director Jim Sterk. The committee's decision is completely unjust and unfair to our team, staff, and our alumni. I'm very grateful for the clear and decisive and unified leadership we have here at Mizzou, and I'm looking forward to doing whatever I can to assist with the appeals process. Together, we will fight for this great institution, and I will damn sure fight for my team. I like that kind of fire, Barry.
I like that, too.
I like that. Yeah. When has a coach ever released a statement in which he cursed in it? You know what? I appreciate you.
Yeah.
I appreciate you, Barry. Fight for this team. Let's get this bowl game. Let's upset Georgia. And let's go win the SEC East. Now, we'll probably lose in the SEC Championship game to Alabama, but that's everybody.
Yeah.
You know? That's everybody not named Clemson is losing to Alabama. But you know what? I want the opportunity to lose to Alabama. So you fight for that opportunity, Barry Odom. I'm on your side here.
I like Barry Odom. I like that he came out and was forceful like that. That's a solid response.
Coming up in just a little bit, we'll put a bow on this thing. It's The Drive.
The Drive. Presented by Tecate.
I want to read this really quickly on the text line. Text line 69306. A lot of people are saying this about the whole situation, and Binkley was kind of saying this earlier, and it's kind of confusing to me. Like, sometimes you just got to know who you are. Like, remember when K-State made a hire, and they hired a D2 coach or a 1AA coach, and, like, you're Kansas State.
Yeah.
No shame in that, but come on now. You weren't plucking a big-time college football coach. Like, you got to get in where you fit in here. So someone texted this in, and people are going back and forth with Twitter. And again, Binkley said this earlier. It's the chance of the SEC championship game that matter or that sucks. Bowl games don't matter. Then I put, bowl games matter. They're big for your program. He put, I don't care that Missouri wins a game like the Citrus Bowl. Conference championships, college football playoffs are the games that can help you with those 5-star recruits. maybe we're like all confused in this. It's Missouri. Going to the Citrus Bowl matters at Missouri. It doesn't matter if you're Ohio State. Doesn't matter if you're Clemson. It doesn't matter if you're Auburn. But yes, next year, if Missouri went to the Citrus Bowl, that would be a fantastic year for Missouri. That'd be like one of the five best seasons they've ever had in football. So to act like these bowl games don't matter, again, it all depends on it. Just like the argument we have with KU, that finishing second in the Big 12 is outstanding for Iowa State. Iowa State will pat themselves on the back for finishing second in the Big 12. For Kansas, that's a disappointing year. That's the worst KU season you've seen in the last 6 years if they finished second in the Big 12. That, again, let's be realistic here. If this Missouri season, let's say that they lift this bowl thing, and then they win 9 games, and then they go to the Citrus Bowl, and they win the Citrus Bowl and to win 10 games, that will be a great year for Missouri. Not a good year. That will be a great year for Missouri.
And I think one of the things that people aren't paying attention to when it comes to the bowl game thing, it's not just about the game itself. Coaches love bowl games because you get an extra 2, 3, 4 weeks of practice you otherwise wouldn't get. And when you're trying to build a program and trying to get to a certain point, and you got young guys and players that you want to spend more time with, coaches love the practice more than the bowl game itself. The bowl game exposure is great, and it's fun to go to a bowl game, and your fans can go down to Orlando or go down to Phoenix or go wherever you're going for the bowl game. That's great. I mean, some of the smaller tier ones, I mean, schools actually lose money on those games instead of making money. But the biggest thing for the program is the practice. You get 3, 4 weeks of free practice time with your squad that otherwise you would not have gotten.
And to me, I mean, I'm with you with the practice. Like, I think only, like, coaches care about that. Just, like, the exposure of playing in a game that really matters. You know what I mean? Like, there's only a handful of bowl games that now really matter. Like, the Citrus Bowl, they played on New Year's Day.
Yeah.
I mean, that matters.
Remember the Cotton Bowl? How big that game was against Oklahoma State? It was prime time after the 2013 season when they went, what, 10-2, 11-1,
whatever? Tell me the button right now for Missouri to go to the Cotton Bowl this
year. Absolutely.
I will happily press the button of them going to the Cotton Bowl. Again, that will be a great year. That will be one of the top 5 seasons in Missouri history if they made the Cotton Bowl next year. I mean, that's a fantastic year. So, again, I understand that for Joey Bosa, bowl games don't matter.
Yeah.
For certain athletes, for Leonard Fournette, the bowl game don't really matter that much. I'm going to the league. But for programs, yes, bowl games still matter. They still have a where you rank in terms of college. So, yes, bowl games absolutely matter. Anybody telling you else, I think, is just lying to you. So today, there's a 30 for 30. Deion Sanders, 30 for 30. Deion Sanders double play is what it called. Deion today actually went on Dan Patrick's show. Dan Patrick just gets everybody that
he's
he
killing
wants.
It.
I mean, it's just the Dan Patrick show. I'm getting everybody I want. And he had Deion Sanders on there today. And Deion Sanders, it's crazy how, like, we disagree about everything in sport culture. Like, disagree with everything. Like, you might think Jordan's better than LeBron, or LeBron's better than Jordan, or whatever it is. And he said, and I think most people believe this, if Bo Jackson never gets hurt, he's the greatest athlete of all time. I never saw Bo. But I think I know enough about Bo Jackson to be like, you're right. You're right about that.
You saw enough videos of Bo Jackson running up walls and throwing Harold Reynolds out from the warning track and breaking bats over his leg. And the Bo Jackson memory that I have that I saw in person that I'll never forget. I was at the Royals game, and it was before they did everything out in left field. You know, back before they renovated Kauffman Stadium the first time and made it grass and did all that stuff, it was AstroTurf, and left field was just a hill with grass on it. There was a chain link fence at the very top. Bo Jackson hit a baseball, and I was sitting in the second deck with 3 buddies from high school. And I saw that baseball take off, and I'm like, man, that's a long bomb, man. That thing landed probably 5 yards below the chain link fence at the top of the hill. I'd been to a million games at Royal Stadium, then Royal Stadium. I had never seen a baseball hit that far and that hard my entire life. That is something I will never, ever forget, because guys aren't supposed to do that. So Bo Jackson, if Deion Sanders says that, absolutely. I mean, Bo Jackson was a freak of nature, man.
I've just always thought about Bo, and it's kind of weird how the Deion Sanders thing kind of turns into a Bo Jackson topic, but people that are the most athletic people that walk among us, they talk about Bo differently.
Yeah.
Like, I never forget, like, we've had Hud on, and he'll be on once the Super Bowl is over, and we always have, like, former athletes on. Like, we've had Jim Abbott, and we've had Kurt Schilling. We've had a lot of former athletes. The way Hud talks about Bo is different.
Yeah.
I mean, Hud played with Ozzie Smith. HUD knows Cal Ripken Jr. Like, HUD has played with Randy Johnson. I'm talking elite level, the 1% of the 1% of the 1%. HUD talks about Bo differently than he talks about everybody else. That to hear Deion Sanders, who was, what, one of the top five athletes in the last 20, if we're just saying, like, ability to do multiple things.
Free.
Deion's a top five, top 10 athlete in the last 20, 25 years. For him to say that it's Bo Jackson just goes to speak just how incredible Bo was.
Yeah, he was amazing, man.
Check out the podcast page, 610sports.com, also available on iTunes. Do us a favor, download the radio.com app. Back again tomorrow. Brandon, do us a favor. Watch a movie today, cut 5 seconds of it, and make that the pop quiz. You got a homework assignment. It's a drive.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.